that spoils everything. Hi, my name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm delighted to be here. Congratulations to the birthday people and the token. Also to the newcomers that are here at the meeting for the very first time. And to those folks who are more than two bus tokens away that got here. You know, appreciate that. I want to thank John for inviting me to do this this deal. It's quite an honor to be asked to speak at any given meeting and to be of service to anywhere that I can in Alcoholics Anonymous. John said he was going to send me a limo. And instead, he showed up, and I think, what is that, a 62 Ford Ranger? But, yeah. I don't know, it might have been a Datsun. I don't know, you know. You know, but it was really cool. No, I mean, it's cool. The windows don't roll up. You know? But John's a good sport, and I'm glad he invited me here. My story is not unlike anybody else's in the room here. You know, I started drinking really early on because it worked, because it was a panacea at that point in my life. It took away all the pain, discomfort, loneliness, fear. A way that I can't describe then, and how I describe it now. It was my first spiritual awakening. It did for me what nothing else on planet Earth possibly could have done. I went to a party. Older people were there. I got obviously I got drunk. I drank all their booze, or as much of it as I could. I don't remember most of the party. Some people said I had a good time. Other people were embarrassed to talk to me. But they took me home. I don't remember that, of course. And I spent my first night with alcohol, having slept on my front lawn, never made it into the house. Woke up early in the morning. It was gray anyway. I think it was morning. And I had puke all over me, pissed in my pants. And slept on the street. And I thought to myself, isn't this wonderful? What a cheap price to pay for the removal of all those other feelings that I had. And I couldn't wait to do it again, so I did it the next night. I just made my task a little bit different. I tried to control and enjoy my drinking. And I don't know if any of you here have ever tried that before. And obviously, I had difficulties for a number of years. When I was controlling, I couldn't enjoy. When I was enjoying, I couldn't control. It was real simple. And I never could figure that one out. A smart guy like me never figured out how to do alcohol and life. They didn't mix. They just, for me, anyway, I don't know, maybe it worked for some of you, but it never worked for me. When I did drink, I drank for effect. I never in my entire life ever had one drink. I can't tell you the bajillion number of times I said, I'm going for one drink. But I never had one. Through my lifetime and trying to manage my alcohol, I did a number, well, I would say actually to sum up my whole life, I was a mediocre guy doing mediocre things, and I always expected thunderous applause. You know, I just wanted people to recognize me and to applaud the fact that I got dressed that day. You know? I wanted people to acknowledge the fact that you know, how hard it was for me to exist in my living conditions where I lived and the emotional turmoil I was going through and all that other stuff like that. Like, they were supposed to know about all that stuff because I never talked to anybody about it. That was my secret. I was so ashamed. I never shared with anybody even when I was drinking. So my friends were all some really good friends, but they never really knew me. Because I never shared with them what was really going on in my life. What happened with me was that I got to the point where I had my last job. And I'm fast forwarding now from when I was a kid to through school and everything like that. But I was at my last job, and I was at the job for about a year. I was there for 5 years, but I was there for about 6 months, and I'd gotten into working on this account in Los Angeles that was an international company in the aerospace industry and everything. And the deal was the company I worked for was out of New York City. And I'm a California native. I was born and raised in the Los Angeles area. And the deal was that if you landed an account that was where the headquarters was, you worked the account and then you got the commissions on the sale. Well, this company, international company, but it was headquartered in Los Angeles. So I worked on this company for 5 years. The company name actually is Allied Signal. Huge, huge company. I pretty well had them sold on the product that I was selling, the service actually that I was selling them. And they said, well, here's the deal. We want you to talk it over with all of our operational managers and our vice presidents of operations. And I said, fine. Who I really want to get to is the president of the company or the chairman of the board, because I want to close the sale and I want to talk to the guy who can make the decision. So that's the kind of person I was, and that's the kind of league that I was running in at the time. I got to the point where I got the executive vice president to give me an interview, and then he went ahead and followed up, and he set up this meeting. And I'm thinking that this is going to be great. All these guys are going to be flown in from all around the world, and they're going to come in. Anyway, what they decided to do is, this was back in the late 80s, and they were going to do a brand new deal that they had set up. It's called teleconferencing, and they had these cameras and screens, and they set up this whole deal where you're talking to people in different countries, and they're on a screen, and you're talking to each other. So I thought that it was very innovative at that time. I think Sprint was the one that had devised the system. And anyway, I had to go to Kansas City to do this thing. So I went to Kansas City, and my company said, we're sending out Vice President of Sales and somebody else. They're going to send somebody. Anyway, they wanted to have this huge support system for me, and I said, no deal. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to cancel the meeting if you do that, because I kept thinking to myself, as paranoid as I was, that I didn't want them stealing my sale. I didn't want them taking credit for this deal, and they're going to close it. I'm not going to get the. I worked on this 5 years, you know. So, anyway, I talked them out of it, and it's probably not the best thing I ever did in my life, or it could have been the best thing that ever happened in my life, because what happened is I got there, and I got there that evening. I checked in the hotel and everything, went downstairs to have dinner, and I thought, as I usually do, I think I'm just going to have one cocktail before dinner. What are you looking like that for, Jerry? Just going to have one drink before dinner. And so I So I went ahead and I ordered dinner along with the drink. So that makes sure I just do the one drink. And after I got the drink, about 2 minutes after the drink, the power goes out. There's a thunderstorm that goes raging through Kansas City and knocks out the power. So they come to me and they apologize for the fact that they can't make my dinner. But what they're going to do, they'll bring me another cocktail instead. And I said, well, okay, I'll wait it out until they can fire up the ovens again and all that kind of stuff like that. So they sent me another drink, and power was still out. So they brought me another drink, and then I asked them for another drink. By the time the power came back on, I had a little bit of my dinner, and I was I knew that I had way too much to drink for my deal tomorrow. This is a big, big, big deal tomorrow. And I really can't screw this up. So, I need to check out. So I said, bring me the bill so I can get out of here. And they said, there is no bill. It's on us. So I'd had all this Crown Royal on them. And I'd throw a 20 or two on the table, and I said, thank you very much. And I go up to my room, and I said, I'm going to watch a little TV and go to bed. So I get all ready for bed and everything, and I, one more wouldn't hurt. Just one more so I can go ahead and go to sleep. So I crack open a quart of vodka that I have in my suitcase to have a drink, and I... by the time the alarm went off in the morning, the phone call to wake me up, and everything like that, the first thing I noticed was the quart of vodka was empty. So I'd finished that off. I had trouble walking. I couldn't even get to the bathroom hardly. I was shaking like a fender on a 52 Ford. Not a 62, a 52. And there I was, man. So I had also brought some other medicinal purposes stuff along with me to make sure that in case I needed to relax during this high-pressure meeting and everything. And I was really grateful that I brought a ton of it along because I needed all I could get, and I abused that as well. It took quite a bit just to get me to get a shower and shave, get dressed, go down and just get some dry toast coffee and get in my rental car and get over to where this meeting was. And I'm sitting there introduced to all these people and everything. And this is a room that's a lot bigger than this. And all the way around the room, they've got these screens. And I don't know, I could probably exaggerate and say there was 20 screens. There probably was at least that, maybe 15. I don't know. I don't remember. I was introduced to all these people individually from all these countries, and I started giving my whole speech, my spiel, so to speak. And I really put it out there, and I'm just cranking along and having a good old time, and I got my confidence now, and I'm on track, and I know everything is smooth, and I've got a handle on it. And then they started asking me questions, and that was the whole deal after I was finished, to start answering questions so as everybody was satisfied. So by the time this whole thing was over with, I don't know, it was probably an hour and a half, 2 hour presentation with the questionings and everything like that. I got in my car, went to the airport, had several drinks at the airport to calm down, and I got on the airplane. I got home. A couple of weeks later, I get a FedEx delivery, and the FedEx delivery is a package. And in that package, I open it up, and there's a VCR tape. So they've got this VCR tape. I said, oh, cool, man, they recorded my presentation. How awesome is that? Now I get to show off to the bosses and everything like this how really good I am, Yeah. And I pull out, I read this letter, and the letter comes along with it, and the letter says, basically, in a thumbnail, we've made a decision to not make a decision at this point. So I was discouraged with that, but still kind of hopeful. It wasn't a no, we're not going to do anything. And it wasn't a yes, which I was hoping for, of course. So I figured, well, you know, come on, it's 9:30 in the morning. Let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at this tape, and you know, so I go build myself a nice big tall Bloody Mary, and I sit down in front of my TV and put it in the VCR and get all comfortable and everything like this. Everything short of popcorn, and I start watching this thing. By the time this tape was finished, I was probably the most disillusioned, disheartened person in my entire life. I've never viewed myself from the perspective that this VCR viewed me. I never viewed myself as you viewed me. I never considered myself this out-of-control, babbling idiot that I was. I realized, one of the first things I realized from this VCR tape is my presentation wasn't on point. It wasn't even eloquent. I used too many swear words. The other thing that I noticed is with this about an hour and a half of questioning that went on with all these guys from all around the world, that I never answered anybody's question. Not once. Not even, this is the surprising thing, with all these questions that went around the room, some of them were asking the same question somebody else asked because they never got the answer, you know, but I never even indirectly answered a question. Not even accidentally. You know, like when you throw mud up against the wall, some of it sticks. None of it stuck. None of it was there. So I get a phone call from New York, obviously, from corporate headquarters. And they say, how you doing? I'm fine. How's it going up there? Fine. How'd your meeting go in Kansas City? And I says, well, I really don't know. And they said, well, we just got out of a conference with the chairman of the board. And, you know, we got the same letter that you got. And we got the same VCR tape that you got. They sent it to us. So I want to let you know that just before you start bullshitting us anymore. So there I was, so what do you want to do about it, Paul? And I said, resign. And they said, good choice. So that was my last job. My money lasted probably another few weeks. Sold everything off that I had, my fancy TV, stereo, VCR, clothes. I sold everything. And as fast as I sold it, I spent it. And then I had no place to go except out in the street. So I don't know, have any of you camped in Los Angeles before? Yeah, I thought so. I kind of figured that. So that's where I was. I went camping. And in my camping venture, you know, which after a week or so, something like this, I knew that what's going to happen is some miraculous thing's going to happen. Somebody's going to pluck me off the street. There you are, Paul. We've been looking all over the hell for you, you know. Come on, let's go to work, and I got a job for you, and, you know, let's get these clothes cleaned up and... I figured somebody's going to rescue me, you know. But I didn't hear nothing. I didn't. Nothing happened. And every day it got more disillusioned. And then finally, I'm sitting on a beach. I think it was Seal Beach, looking out at Catalina Island, the sun coming up at my back, and there's this thin pink line across the smog layer that's cutting across the top of the water and the top of Catalina Mountains out there. And it's just a beautiful scene with the water looking like it's a pond, like it's a lake, you know, nice and calm and everything like that. Well, it was like a real spiritual thing for me. I don't know why, but it was a real spiritual thing, so I cried. Just like every man who camps on the streets of Los Angeles does. You know, you cry. But that didn't stop me from, you know, taking some hefty swigs off this half-gallon bottle of vodka I had with me. And all the while I knew, since I had the bottle of vodka, the cops were going to be there any minute. As soon as somebody spotted me sitting out there on this beach all by myself, they're going to pluck me off for having alcohol on the beach, like they always did. And, of course, the other $50 fine was in a glass container, which is the bottle. You can't have that on the beach either. So I'd spent another 3 days in jail eating those lousy pancakes. Anyway, I had that spiritual experience that I said, I can't live like this anymore. I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to be this anymore. And so a couple weeks after that, I walked into a VA hospital because I was really not just mentally ill at that point. I was physically ill. They fixed me up, and I asked them, where's the department? What do you want me to do to get set up and get fitted for my canvas jacket? And they said, we got a different idea. We think you need to go upstairs and talk to these people in the alcohol and drug treatment program. Well, the audacity. I mean, you know, these people really, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what I've been through. They don't know who I am. So I set up there to prove them wrong. They suggested, after I went through their program for alcohol and drug, they sent me to a recovery home. And from there, I started getting... I found the fellowship. What I discovered in this recovery home after just a few short days was I found the fellowship. And I found the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that fellowship... saved my ass, because any given day I was going to go run across the street and go to Sparky's, because I know my name was on a stool over there, you know. And but I says, one more day, just like the guy you guys were talking about. You kept saying, you know, hang out one more day, you know, do it one day at a time, type of stuff. And some of it was sinking in, not much of it, but some of it was sinking in. That's what got me hanging around the program. I used to say I was in the program for about 5 months before I had my spiritual awakening. Well, that's bullshit. You know, I wasn't in the program. I was around the program. I was hanging around you guys, and you guys were keeping me sober. Your friendship, your experience, strength, and hope is all that was keeping me sober. I didn't have a God in my life. I never did. I didn't know how to get one of those things in my life. I didn't want to go to a church. Spent my whole life detesting people who were religious because I didn't understand it. That's all. You know, I was ignorant to whatever religions, you know, say. So what I did is I was sitting out there in Sunset Cliffs one day, and I'm reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the blue one, the big one, yeah. And I finished chapter 4, just had finished chapter 4, and I got really angry, and I slammed the book shut, threw it down, stood up, and started screaming and yelling. I'm out there in Sunset Cliffs now, okay? And there's really nobody around me. I don't know, this might be around 10 o'clock in the morning. And I start screaming and yelling at a God I don't believe in to, you know, to give me some kind of a clue. And I'm madder than hell, and I'm just screaming and yelling, and I'm calling them names that you don't call people. You don't call your worst enemy. You know? You don't say things like that. You know, just all this anger and rage was coming out of me. And it was all because I can't get this damn thing. I can't get this program of Alcoholics Anonymous like all these other people are getting it. Why? Why can't I have it as well? Why can't I get what these other folks have? You know? And knowing all along, if I don't get this thing, I got to go camping again back in the streets of Los Angeles, you know? Like there's no other life for me. It's either that or get what you've got. So I'm in a hell of a dilemma. I'm in this, you know, this purgatory. So, screaming and yelling, top of my lungs, God, I don't believe in, you know, and finally finishing up, just give me some kind of clue, would you? If you do exist, give me a clue. And with all my heart, I yelled and screamed that, and I meant it. And there it was, I was standing there, looking around like, okay, look, you know, people are probably gathering around by now, and they're calling the cops, and they're going to be coming out with the nets pretty soon, and all the kind of stuff like that. And I will get my straitjacket. But none of that happened. So I sat back down again, flipped the book open again. Let's see, where was I? Oh, chapter 5, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm starting to read chapter 5 in the book, and I get a couple of pages into that. You know, before we get to the steps, and you know, just finishing up a little part here about step 3, and all of a sudden I hear this huge thud, this just crushing thud sound. I'm going back so I can explain it now. I didn't know what it was then, and I look up and there's this white sheet of water, just a white sheet of water, and man, it comes crashing down on top of me. Just crashing right down on top of me. Now here I am, minding my own damn business. Reading this wonderful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and trying to get some kind of spirituality out of it, and some peace and serenity in my life with the ocean, and everything is just so pleasant. Gorgeous day, sun out, working on my tan, and all that kind of stuff like this. And all of a sudden, this ice cold water comes crashing down on top of me, and I'm pissed. I mean, I'm pissed. I am so angry. While this, and I'm thinking and thinking, and all of a sudden, I hear this thud again, and this time, the sound is way too familiar to me, and I'm scooting backwards as fast as I can, and that wave comes crashing down again. And I'm sitting there, what in the hell's going on? And I look out at the ocean, and it's exactly the way it was before. Nice and calm, rolling waves just every few minutes, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, a wave was coming in, you know, just nothing. Wasn't even barely slapping up against the rocks, you know. And I look up the coast, up toward the pier, and there's this white froth all in the rocks and everything, all this turmoil. And I look the other way, and the same thing. And I'm saying, my God, what's going on? What the hell is going on here? And I look down, and all my stuff is wet, and I'm cold. And my book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's broken. The book is broken. Right there in chapter 4, the book is broken. The back is broken. I got it in 2 sections laying there. Now I'm really angry. I mean, it's a brand new book. You know that? I just got the thing, you know, a few months ago. So I'm mad. Grab all my stuff. I get up, and I climb off the hill, and I get up on top. And I stop a couple of times on the way, and I'm looking back in disbelief that this happened. Well, when I finally get to the top of the hill, what happened is I just say, just let it go, just forget it and go on home. And I didn't even take one step. And I says, oh, wait a second. Wasn't that you just a few minutes ago standing down there screaming and yelling at the top of your lungs, to a God you don't believe in, give me a clue that you exist? Yeah, that was me. So, what's to say that that wasn't my clue? what's to say that that wasn't the message that I needed to hear? And then it just dawned on me, well, who else would care? I care. That was my message. And that was the first day that I got into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the first day I had a God in my life. Because the first day I ever believed. And what happened from there is they asked me to do some volunteer work. So I did some volunteer work at Detox down 1111 Island Avenue. So I wound up, you know, down there for a while, and I wound up, deciding I want to get into the business. So I went to school, got into the business, and wound up becoming the program manager there. And then I went on to some other programs and moved on to, in my career, my new career, which I thought was going to be sales, but, you know, sales was never my bag. And I never, ever would have thought being an alcohol drug counselor was my bag. I never would have figured that. But it was. And it was a passion for me, and I fell in love with it. And what happened from there was I eventually got this an interview, an application, accepted, interview, and I got this job for the Superior Court of California working for judges in doing interventions on cases and reviewing all DUI cases and anything to do with alcohol and drugs. And I'm telling you, it was the most fun I have ever had in my entire life. Had you told me that when I was, you know, back at 15 years old or something like this, that one of these days I'm going to be doing this kind of crap, you know, I'd have laughed in your face. Well, while I was living in the streets of L.A., I happened to also have a particular propensity to want to die. Okay? I had these lots of suicidal ideations, and I decided that would be the best thing for me to do. I felt like dying was a step up. It was really going to be a step up. It was going to be a break for me and a break for the planet. And so what I would do is I would walk down the alleyways of East Long Beach area. Some of those, I don't know if you're familiar with that area whatsoever, but, in talking to people in those alleys and saying things that are, you know, offensive to those people, the fact that I was white walking down those alleys was enough reason for me to be dead today. And some of the things that I said, I don't care where it was, it could have been in police headquarters, I wouldn't have been here. You know, those guys would have taken me in. But the realization hit me when I got to the other end of this particular alley, because my mission was not to come out the other end of the alley. I honestly, that was my mission. And I knew that it was a sure shot. It was no fail. It was a no-fail deal. Can't miss. And can you imagine my demoralization when I walked out the other end of that alley that these guys wouldn't even waste a bullet on me? I wasn't even worth a bullet. So I really felt pathetic. Now, going from that thought to working in the Superior Court of California for judges in helping them in cases, I ask you, how do you connect the dots of that? How do you connect that? How do you get from there to here? How do you do that? See, I don't know, other than a miracle that happened in my life, and a God, a loving and caring God, who drug me through the mud and tested my stubbornness and gave me free reign at my will. Just let me run as hard and as long as I want to run, to the point where I finally couldn't take another step and I had to get some help. And then he says, okay, now that I got your attention, then he started helping me, because I really wanted help. But at first, I really wanted help not to be on the streets anymore. I didn't like camping. I got friends, they go into the mountains, they go camping all the time. They say, "Want to go, Paul?" I said, "No." "No, I'm gonna watch the football game this weekend. I'm going to stay here where, you know, my idea of camping now is a motel room, you know?" So I don't do that. So I don't do that really anymore. But how in the world I got from where I was to where I wound up, while I was at the Superior Court of California and having the time of my life and enjoying, I can't wait to get up in the morning and go to work. I can't wait to put my suit on and go to work. I can't wait for the judges to come in and I could sit down and I could talk with them about, okay, what do we got today? And look at the calendar and this one, and this one. Let me go talk to those guys. Let me see what we can do with those guys, you know. And I just had so much fun, you know. And basically, it was a lot of it was 12-step work, but you know, And what happened somewhere along the line, I got this. They gave me an award for being an employee of the month, and I just thought it just doesn't get any better than this. To have a job that you love, to live the life that you want, to make this obscene amount of money that they're giving me, to do all of these things, and they give you an award on top of it, you know. And I was asking them when I got the job, how much is it going to cost me? You know, I'm short on funds here. How much was it going to cost me? You know? And then it was several months after that, and it was a complete surprise. They did a really great job on this. Went to another employee business meeting, as we had them once a month and everything. And I generally blew those things off. I was above all that. But they twisted my arm. They got me to go to this meeting. They said a lot of the judges are going to be there, you know, because there's going to be some special announcements and everything. It'd be a good idea if you showed up and everything. So I showed up. And I'm sitting there talking to my friends. And what they did is they had this gathering, did a little bit of business and everything. And then they had this presentation, and they started reading off this litany of things that this guy was doing. And it was just, I mean, talk about a fabulous employee and everything like this. And what a guy. And he does all this stuff, and he really gets along with everybody. And he's happy-go-lucky. And he's just having the time of his life all the time. And we need more employees like this and all that kind of stuff like this. And we're proud to give this guy the Employee of the Year for the Superior Court of California Award and everything like this. Would you please come up here, Mr. Paul Ross? Me? Wow. I mean, how does a guy get from an alley in East Long Beach to the Employee of the Year Award? You know? So, you know, what I have to say to the new folks that are here is hang in there, because I guarantee you it gets better, despite yourself. Because I know you got a plan. I had one too. And that plan didn't work for me. But you guys loving me and keeping me around here and caring about me long enough until your plan worked is what this is all about. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. Absolutely saved my life. But most importantly, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a God, which is the most important thing in my life today. I used to say AA was the most important, and I really mean it. It is the most important, but it's right behind God. I'm sorry. Because God is with me and has been with me, and now I'm with God. And that's the connection that I was missing my entire life. That's what I was chasing at the bottom of a bottle. That's what I was chasing at the bottom of a bag. I was looking for something to connect me with you. something to connect me with planet Earth. And it never, ever, ever worked. Ever. And to this day, I am so delighted and so happy that you guys started out Save My Life, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, Save My Life, and God kept me living. Thank you very much.